Ladies and gentlemen, thank you very much for listening to Drive Through HR. I am in Las Vegas today, sunny Las Vegas today. It is a wonderful, for me, morning. For everyone else in the world, it is a wonderful afternoon. Thanks so much for listening to our show, and we have an outstanding guest, and I just want to get right to it and right to her. Peggy, how are you doing today?
I'm doing awesome, thank you.
Awesome. So do us a favor and introduce yourself. Tell us a little bit about yourself.
Sure. So I am talking to you from Under Armour's corporate headquarters in Baltimore, Maryland. I've been with Under Armour about a year and a half now, heading up their global talent acquisition and onboarding team. But I've been doing HR and or recruiting for a long time, for more than I won't even say the years, but I'll tell you what I did. I started with a company called Apple Computer. It was called Apple Computer, not Apple, and I started within the year the Mac was introduced. So that's as many years as I'll give you, but it's kind of a big anniversary right now for Apple, so most people know how long ago that's been. I was with HR and recruiting with them for about 8 years, mostly out of the office they had in Charlotte, North Carolina. And as they were moving everything to Austin, Texas, I took a job heading up HR for a lesser-known company called Microsoft, who had a small office of about 40 people that was opening in Charlotte, North Carolina. So I went to Microsoft, where I then stayed 19 years doing a variety of HR recruiting roles. The second half of my career there was primarily solely focused on recruiting, and left them after 19 years to go head up talent acquisition for a very cool software company in Charleston, South Carolina, where I was living on the beach, and that's when Under Armour called me, and that's it in a nutshell.
Nice. Do you still live in Charleston, or did you move?
I picked up and moved. I tell people I left paradise for Under Armour. Yeah. So we moved to Annapolis, so it's a little bit like Charleston.
Yeah, truth. Well, what's top of mind for you these days? What's keeping you up at night?
Oh, what isn't? So Under Armour just announced our earnings, our yearly earnings, and we're growing at a clip. I think year over year we've grown by 27% year over year, and we've been growing in the 20s every year since we went public, which has been about 8 years. So I'm constantly trying to figure out how to not get in the way of the company from a talent acquisition standpoint, and eventually how to get ahead of it. But right now I just don't want to get in the way of it. So how do I work stronger, faster, smarter? How do I figure out how to keep our expenses and our resources down while doubling headcount year over year? How do I support our explosive growth in international when I just have to build some fundamental support in that space, and the growth that we're doing in retail. It's just when you're in a high growth, high visible, really well-known brand, how do you make sure that talent acquisition maps to what the brand is, right? So my brain just never stops. How can I do things better? How can I continue to be disruptive? How can what we do in talent acquisition map to what it looks like to be Under Armour? Does that make sense?
Oh, absolutely. And I think because of you've worked with some high growth companies in the past, both with Apple Computer and with Microsoft, what did you pull over? What from those experiences, albeit it is a little bit different, different types of products, I guess, but what did you pull over either in terms of process or technology or anything like that from your learning from at both those types of companies to Under Armour?
Yeah. I would say probably, first of all, what I pulled over is more cultural stuff. It's just kind of understanding where we are as a company and what I'm going to be living through. So, you know, if you think back to when I started with Microsoft in 1992, they had about 10,000 employees worldwide. We were called personnel, I think, personnel administration, if I remember correctly. I used to get every week I'd get a floppy disk with all of our employees on an Excel spreadsheet. So, in other words, there wasn't a lot of infrastructure. There wasn't a lot of knowing what to do. You had to constantly be innovating and thinking and doing things that there was nobody else doing it before you. So I come in knowing that's the culture. So while you know, at the end of my career at Microsoft, I'd had lots of experience, had lots of infrastructure, a great budget to support whatever I needed to do. I at least came into this knowing I'm not going to have any of that anymore. However, I now have some experience, and I can bring that over. So one of the first things I did was look at the growth that we're doing. So we needed to hire, in corporate alone, about 400 people, not a huge number. However, the corporate base, there's only 1,500 employees in all of corporate, right? If you need to hire 400 and you're doing about 5 interviews for every hire, that's 2,000 interviews that are going to need to be conducted on site. So the first thing I had to do was think about how can I do this in a way where we keep the quality up, but we also maximize the time that we spend in the process. So not revolutionary, but just like let's do panel interviews, right? Let's make sure that we're maximizing both the candidate's time and the hiring manager and hiring team's time. So I brought over panel interviews. The next thing I did was look at where's our bottleneck, and our bottleneck was a lot of the front end. It was a lot of the recruiter screening, because you know that funnel, we touch more before it ever gets, you know, to the hiring managers. So I went out, did some research, and we've implemented video screening, which by the way, has been tremendous, well-liked by the candidates, well-liked by the hiring managers, and has absolutely decreased our time to fill. So we've been utilizing that. So those are some of the, like, you know, just process technology things that we're doing. And then it's just kind of, you know, I'm rebuilding the perception of talent acquisition at the same time, you know, that I'm trying to constantly be on the forefront of, you know, how do we think about what we do and how we do it differently, and building up my own team.
Yeah. Well, you mentioned the candidates. I want to get your take on kind of what this – it's a popular concept these days, the candidate mm-hmm. experience. Mm-hmm. What's your take on kind of what candidates today, I mean, as opposed to 10, you know, 15 years ago, et cetera, what are the brands that, you know, that you manage, and how should we manage that candidate experience?
Well, that's a great question, and honestly, that's something that's always top of mind for me, more so even than our hiring manager partnership experiences. So we, especially when you think of the big brands, you know, like a Microsoft or an Under Armour, people are really emotionally attached to our brand. It was the same way at Apple, quite frankly. And so you have to make sure that they have a perception of what it would be like dealing with the brand. And we have to meet that expectation all the time. So one of the things that was already here before I started, which I thought was phenomenal, was this idea that every candidate that comes in for an on-site interview is almost treated like what we call an Under Armour asset, you know, one of our professional athletes that we bring in and have them spend time with us on site. And we call it a run of show. So it's not an interview itinerary or, you know, an agenda. It's a run of show. And we really make sure that we're transparent. The candidate knows what their day is going to be like, who they're going to be meeting with. They have it presented to them in a really slick format. And so that's something that I've inherited and I love, and then I think about it as, how do I make it scalable, right? So how do I keep this idea and keep this concept, but but figure out how do I do it in a way that's going to support the tremendous growth that we're going to continue to have. All right. So that's one of the ways. I think the other thing is just trying to be transparent. When you talk about losing sleep, I get, again, because it's such an emotional connection to us, I can't even begin to tell you how many times I'm touched by candidates that want a personal response and reaction from me. And I lose sleep that I've missed somebody or I didn't respond because it's just me. And I think there's also a perception that we're much larger and bigger than we are. But I just believe in transparency. When I talk to candidates, I make sure they understand exactly what this place is like. I make sure they understand what the process is going to be. If I set expectations, I try to set them in a way that says, hey, this is what we're going to do. This is when we're going to do it and what you can expect to have happen. Also from a candidate experience, I had a meeting with Kevin Plank, our CEO and founder, right after I started with the company, and he was talking to me a lot about candidate experience, and he relayed to me that when he was first, you know, years ago when people were sending him resumes directly, right, that he always personally responded and he always threw in like a brochure of our product, right? And he also said he was a firm believer that a fast no was better than a slow yes. So I've taken that. Again, that's that transparency. That's like we're not going to keep you hanging. It's either yes or no for now, and then we keep moving on. So that's how I think about candidate experience. We actually participated in the Candidate Experience Awards, the Candies, I believe they're called.
Mm-hmm. Right.
And to be, again, just completely 100% transparent, and I told the folks at the Candies this, I did it because I had no budget to actually do a candidate survey. So I thought, wow, what a great way for me to get feedback from my candidates without me spending any money on it. So I kind of entered it with that in mind, honestly thinking this is just a great way for me to get that feedback and to get it at all phases of our process, right? Because the candies are great. It's not just about the people that have been offered. It's about people who submitted a resume and didn't go any further, you know, as well as people who interviewed and didn't get an offer. So it's at all phases of the process. It ended up being a great experience, and in a lot of ways, one, I did get some really cool detailed feedback, and it was very positive. So I know what I want to keep. I know as we grow what I don't want to accidentally throw out, as part of not process friendly maybe, we go for expediency over experience. So that happened. And then in addition, we won the award, and we're in one of the top 14 companies as being one of the best around candidate experience. So I got a nice, double whammy out of that.
That's awesome. You mentioned culture a couple times, mm-hmm. and I wanted to get your take on how we should market, because I know, even though I don't know what's behind the veil at Under Armour, I'm just mm-hmm. assuming y'all have a fantastic culture. How do you bring that stuff that's, and you probably had to do it at Apple Computer and at Microsoft, but how do you bring
right.
that stuff that's behind the veil, so to speak, and how do you make that more out in the open for fitability? Either you fit this
yes.
or you don't fit this.
Yes. Yeah, that's great, and it's something that we're still working on. So there's, I think, several pieces to that. One is, your employment brand really should represent what it's like to work at the company, and we're working on that. So if you were to go to our career site, for example, I'm going to tell you right now, it's not there yet, but it's getting close. It really should very, very authentically show you what it's going to be like to work there. We've got a great video up there that I think does a super job of explaining it, but it needs to kind of come through in almost every piece of your communication. What we've done, what I know I do is personally, even with every interview that I conduct, is I spend time really being very open about what the culture's like here, because either you're going to love it or it's not going to be for you. We're high growth. We're constantly moving. The energy is off the charts. The expectations are high about the commitment that you're going to bring to the company. We're definitely very, sports-oriented or athlete-oriented. So we use a lot of analogies. You know, we talk about you got to be, you know, willing to get tackled, get back up, and keep moving. You know, get the ball across the finish line. We're thrifty because we're growing. We're still in the growth mode. And if you go and look at some of our brand values, one of it is, you know, make $1 spend like $3. So how do you take advantage of every opportunity we have, and how do we think about it, you know, in a more thrifty way? And you have to be – Kevin Plank in the last earnings call specifically said, we're a company that changes every 6 months. So you have to be open to change. So it's just making sure that it's communicated, that the hiring team understand that it is okay for them to communicate all the different parts of the company and make sure people truly understand what it's like to come in. I'd like to move to where we do more around experiential kind of part of the interview as well, so you get to really kind of or job simulation, I guess is what it is, but really get creative around how can we make sure it's one thing to say the words, it's another thing to feel it. So how do you kind of build that into the interview process? Again, that's kind of my 2.0 view of how we want to do it here in Under Armour, but I think people need to also kind of get a realistic view of what that means day to day. But it's so important to us. I mean, honestly, if I had to think about most of the successful hires that we've made since I've been here, if you weigh the culture fit versus their, you know, the skills and abilities and can do the job, we'll over-index on the culture fit because that's how you have to get the work done here and how you maneuver through the organization.
Yeah, it's almost like you can teach the competencies, or you can at least, if there's some raw material there, you can at least teach towards the stuff that you need. You know, you've obviously done a lot on the talent acquisition side. You've also been in personnel, i.e. HR. I want to get your take on where does recruiting stop and HR begin for you?
Oh, wow, that's a great question. You know, it's so interesting because it definitely blurred. I mean, from a responsibility standpoint, I think after I'd been with the company about 90 days, I was asked to take over onboarding, right? So you think of the recruit, I think of it from the process of recruiting is the attraction piece, you know, getting people interested in your company and then moving them through to offer. Right, then accepted offer, and now they're actually starting with you and coming on board. And what's that experience like for a certain amount of time? And then I think at that point, whatever that point is for, and for us, I'd say it's probably about 90 days. Then at that point, it really is primarily responsible from the HR side of the house on the care and feeding, you know, of your team once they've been here and are acclimated. Me personally, it's really hard. It blurs all the time, and I think that's why I love the environment I'm in, because we are such a team. Everybody does a little bit of everything, and there's no, you know, there's no solid lines on, okay, this is where your job ends and my job starts. We all kind of bleed over each other all the time, and not just within HR. I have somebody from risk management that's helping me with college recruiting. You know, my finance partners are helping me, you know, with some of my video interviewing rollouts. So it's just, it makes for a lot of fun because you're kind of, everybody's everywhere.
Yeah, I love that. It's traditionally, it's been that line of demarcation has been onboarding and everything prior to onboarding,
yep,
talent acquisition, everything after HR. But you start to see all these surveys and things that extend, and where it really gets confusing is internal mobility. How,
yes,
do you handle that internal mobility piece, which blurs it? You know, I'd say it blurs it for everybody because it's like, how do we actually fill it? Well, we already have some of these people, but anyhow, let me ask you about metrics because I know,
yes,
that I know you've kind of grown up. I know you've grown up with metrics, and you probably,
yes,
you have your dashboard and whatnot. What, out of all the things that you could measure and that you could care about, what are the, you know, top two or top three things that you're always looking at and making sure that you're trending well in those areas?
Yeah, I mean, Yeah, and let me tell you, so to just give you a little background, before I started in September of 2012 here at Under Armour, and in April is when the very first ATS was implemented for the company. So it had been around about 5 months before I joined the company. And so part of my challenge has been just kind of identifying what kind of metrics can I even pull with reasonable assurance that I'm getting a good picture and an accurate picture. So we are in just the very beginning phases of building a recruiting scorecard and an HR scorecard. In fact, met with the CFO yesterday to talk about some of the things we want to measure from a recruiting side. So in a high-growth company, obviously one of the biggest things is, you know, are we able to meet the hiring demand? You know, and that's about as basic as you can get. So we know we need to hire so many people this year. Are we going to be able to do it? What do we think the gap will be if there is one, and what do I do to close the gap? And as you know, there's one thing. So when I started, there was a conversation about, wow, we need to hire 300 people this year. How are you going to do it? And my response back was, no, actually, we need to hire 500 people. We have 300 new positions, but we have turnover. And that was just not something that was kind of, you know, in the DNA initially to think about it that way. Now everybody gets it. So it really is, I'm coming in and trying to be simple, relevant to the business, and, you know, of the metrics that I have, what can I actually, like, show. So I'm going to tell you, I'm not a big fan of days to fill for a variety of reasons. We will track it because I want to know if we're having difficulty with certain roles and, you know, making sure that there is a strategy on those. I'm really more concerned of what's the company's demand, can we meet the demand, and if not, how can we, you know, how can we get there? So that's my big one.
Nice.
Too simple?
Yeah, I think that, you know, first of all, it's like if you look out there in the marketplace, people are measuring all kinds of interesting things. But I think for a high growth, in high growth, you have such specific things that I kind of like that. I don't like the fact that you're looking at time to fill, but you're not overemphasizing or stressing out about it. It's like,
right.
I want to know what it is. But I'm not going to be, you know, we're not going to be looking at it every moment. If it
right.
becomes above a certain number, et cetera. All right, I got to ask you about process and technology. So I've got this chicken and egg thing that goes on in my head of, you know, can you, should you focus on process or should you focus on technology? And in my head I have this, okay, if you have an inferior process but you put superior technology on top of it, does it get you there? Or vice versa, if you've got a great process and you put inferior technology on there, can it get you there? So I've just got to ask you, from your all your years of experience, are you more of a process person or are you more of a technology person?
That's two different questions. So I'll answer the second question, which is I am more of a technology person. So I will take risks and chances with technology that I may not take in just a process piece, okay, because I love technology. And I have great examples of where technology has taken my process, influenced my process in better ways. That said, I'm a firm believer that technology should support what I need to do for the business. Sometimes it will create a process that maybe you hadn't thought about or that is different than what you do, but it's going to be so significant of an improvement that it's worth the trade-off. But ultimately, you need to know what are you trying to do, what are you driving for, and then, you know, ensure that you've got the technology to support that. So I've had conversations even just recently with some folks and said, look, I'm not gonna change my process because it makes it easier for us to have a report for the CFO, right?
Gotcha.
So,
yeah.
So there are times where I think that makes sense. At the same point with this video interviewing that we've started doing, it had an impact on our overall recruiting process. right? So I had to step back, look at it, and say, well, if we do this and implement this, how do I have to change the process to support this new thing called video interviewing? And I thought that was the right trade-off. So it's, I don't know that you can, I don't think there's a solid line. And I think anybody who's not constantly out there looking at what the new technologies are and looking at ways that we can take pieces of the process that could, that technology can either improve on or could decrease the bottlenecks and the time to get good candidates in front of hiring managers, then we're doing all of us a disservice. And so I do both. I just signed up to try out a new technology that I hope will really, really expedite our scheduling process. So maybe I'll talk to you again in a few months and let you know if that worked or not. But I will take risks in that space.
Nice.
I love technology. Listen, how could I not? I mean, 30 years of being on a personal computer and being in that industry, I know what it can do.
Yeah, it's funny when you mentioned the floppy disk earlier. I was going to ask you to follow up. Was it a 5 1/4 or a 3 1/2 inch floppy disk?
It was a five and a quarter. Yeah, let me tell you, the reason Apple hired me was because I knew how to use a product called MultiPlan, which was a precursor to Excel. That's why they hired me.
Yeah.
I was on an Apple III using MultiPlan to help with budgets.
That's back when you could do stuff on Harvard graphics and things like that.
Yeah.
So we've only got about 3 minutes left of this show,
okay.
And I wanted to ask one last question around. You have a wonderful consumer brand. And so how much of your time or energy is looking at the external brand of, like, Glassdoor?
Yes.
You know, the Yelps or Glassdoors of the world that are basically taking some sentiment around the brand. And, you know, let's be honest, it's affecting candidates. It's affecting people that interview with us, et cetera. How much do you or your hiring manager or anybody internal pay attention to stuff like that?
We definitely pay attention to it. So I will tell you, I make a point of always checking out Glassdoor. Before I even took this job, I went on Glassdoor just to see what was being said around interviewing at Under Armour so I could kind of know what I was walking into. I also weigh the comments and the feedback pretty appropriately as well, and I try to make sure our hiring managers do the same. But I will tell you, there was a recent article in the Baltimore Business Journal that someone just took random quotes out of Glassdoor. Of course, they picked the more interesting ones and wrote an article about it. And it definitely got Kevin Plank's attention. So we pay attention to it. I think it helps my hiring teammates understand why, you know, we ask them to do certain things and why the candidate experience is so important. But it's weighted about that way.
Nice.
Yeah, well, but Kevin definitely saw it.
Well, yeah, you know, they're trying to sell magazines, so of course they're going to take the most
delicious
stuff. So, yeah, Peggy, we are out of time, and I told you it would fly by. First of all, I want to thank you. Thank you for carving out time for us and our audience. You schooled us. You brought a lot of knowledge to the table and a lot of experience, and just appreciate you. And I want to also thank everyone for listening to Drive-Thru HR. Have a wonderful afternoon, and we're going to roll on out to a little cure. Thanks again, Peggy.